Hi, I'm Matana DeWitt, joined by Dr. Luke Bray. Welcome to Discover Your Roots, a podcast that will give you the tools for understanding and applying the wisdom of the Bible in your own context. In season three, we're focusing on Christian advocacy. We're trying to understand how Christian theology shapes what or who we advocate for, why we advocate, and how we advocate. As sin causes our world to become increasingly more divided, our society has moved from worshiping God to worshiping self. Christians need to understand how to combat division with unity. How should Christians advocate for others? What do the teachings of the Bible have to say about advocacy? How should Christians advocate for the Jewish community amidst rising anti-Semitism? We're unpacking all of this in season three of Discover Your Roots. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Discover Your Roots, season three, episode five, where we are talking about what is biblical love. So last episode, we talked about what is justice exactly and how does it inform Christian advocacy. Today, we will continue our conversation by exploring the relationship between love and Christian advocacy. So like our previous discussions, I'm going to give a couple helpful questions just for us to sort of anchor the conversation. First question is, what is biblical love? We're going to explore that. The second question is, what is biblical love not? That's also really important. And then number three, how does biblical love shape Christian advocacy? So, Luke, can you start by defining what is love? What are some of the ways that our culture teaches us to think about love?
Yeah, I think the way that the culture teaches us about love oftentimes is just really misguided. Because love usually is about the way you feel and what you can get out of someone or something. And those are all completely opposite of what true love is based on what the Bible tells us. Love is not a feeling. It's kind of like the quote DC Talk from the 90s, love is a verb, right? It's a commitment. It's an active commitment. So that's the biblical understanding of love. Also, love is not trying to get what you can out of a person or out of a situation or a thing, but it's actually sacrificing yourself. So, and the Bible teaches us a lot about that. Now, that's not to say that every single kind of example of love or the idea of love is bad. I think that there's some redeemable pieces. When we look out in culture, there's several kind of rom-coms that if I'm on an airplane and they're, on the movie playing machine, then I'm going to watch it. And that one of those is Notting Hill. Have you ever watched Notting Hill?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Hugh Grant, Julia Roberts. It's the classic. There's no like surprises. It's everything that is
everything you want a rom-com to be.
Yeah, everything you want it to be. The weirdness, the funniness, the tears, all the things. But what I think is really interesting about this story is there's this guy who runs a travel bookshop, which those things don't exist anymore. And then you have this crazy superstar movie star, Julia Roberts, right? And it's the story of how they come together, how they get to know each other, fall in love. And I think there's a lot of ups and downs, which you would expect in a rom-com. But the two things that I think really pinpoint what real love looks like or should look like that has a biblical basis that we find in the movie. One is Hugh Grant's willingness to sacrifice himself, sacrifice his wants and his desires to just let her go and let her be because he cares too much about her and he doesn't want to affect her life. And so he loves her by letting her go. That is sacrifice, real sacrifice that comes from a heart of love. On the opposite side, Julia Roberts has to walk through a tremendous amount of stuff in order to get to this point, but she believes the best about him and believes the best about his motives. And that is what eventually brings her to the point of them being able to get together. But that's what love does. Love believes the best about a person's motivations, even though sometimes it seems a little confusing, even sometimes like the situation may indicate that the person has malintentions for you. It's believing the best. And so like those two elements, I think, are really, really strong in that story. But the Bible tells us about what love is supposed to be. And we look at the scriptures, love is everywhere in the Bible, and it's essential to everything we understand about what it means to know God, who God is, how God treats us. 1 John chapter 4, John says, anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. That's how fundamental the idea of love is. God himself, he's the one who defines love. He himself in his own character. So this verse makes it pretty clear that understanding love is central to knowing who God is and having a robust theology. So at the very beginning of our season, we were talking about what theology is. Theology is thinking or the study of God. So if we don't understand love, we can't understand God. Mm-hmm. We have to understand love in order to understand God. So it makes it very clear that we have to kind of explore this topic very carefully if we want to understand what it means to have a theology of advocacy. So the Bible consistently portrays love as the driving force behind God's actions and his expectations for us as human beings.
That's powerful. Whenever the Bible talks about love, what does it mean by the word love? Are there multiple types of love?
There is, yeah. So there's usually, particularly in the Greek New Testament, when it talks about love, there's usually three different kinds of words in Greek that are understood. The first one, not taking any particular priority order, eros is a love that is usually reserved for love between a husband and a wife. It's where we get the word eroticism, things like that, more of a sexual kind of love, but that's eros. Philo is another word that means love, but philo typically means something like brotherly love, a love of a friend, something like that, which is where Philadelphia gets its name, right? The city of brotherly love. It's from Philo. But then the word that is most closely related to the covenantal love in the Hebrew scriptures, chesed, that word is most closely related to agape love in the Greek. And agape love is this idea of selflessness, a sacrificial kind of love. It's the highest form of love that we can understand in Christian theology.
Wow, that's powerful. What does that look like practically? So if we are to live out this sacrificial kind of love, the very deep, the deepest of love, the highest kind of love, what does that look like? How can I tell if I truly love someone the way that I'm supposed to?
I think that's a fantastic question. And I think it would be disappointing if we didn't have a really strong answer, but we do. We find it in 1 Corinthians 13. It's perfectly outlined for us. What does love look like? Paul tells us exactly what love looks like. His definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13 just kind of completely lays bare what does it look like in the real world, in real lives, to actually love practically. What does it mean? He says, love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. So if we work our way through the passage, a few of these principles stand out very quickly. Number one, love is patient. To love is to be long-suffering. It's to wait. It's to be patient. We have to be willing to wait or to do the work even when it's hard. That's what love looks like. Love is kind. Kindness means treating everyone with respect, treating people with dignity, regardless of their background, regardless of the circumstances. It's kindness. He says, love does not envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud.
When you say proud, what does it mean it's not proud? Like, I'm sure you love children, like you love your children, you're proud of them. Mm-hmm. But what does it mean that love isn't proud in that way? So, like, you know, when I was growing up, my dad would say, like, oh, I'm so proud of you. And it was like an endearing, like,
right.
Yeah. So what's the difference there?
So it's about boasting. Boasting and pride are something that is mentioned here. Mm-hmm. Love is incompatible with all forms of pride. Mm. I think Leon Morris really kind of helps us understand this in his commentary on 1 Corinthians. He says very, very succinctly, he says, love is concerned to give itself, not to assert itself.
That's great.
That's the difference.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. So back to 1 Corinthians. The next part sound like they have a lot to do with how we respond to being wronged or hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an accurate interpretation? And what are Paul's main takeaways there?
Yeah. The main takeaways are love doesn't dishonor other people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very careful to honor. Mm-hmm. It love champions people. Doesn't crush them.
Hmm.
Love is not self-seeking. Like, you give the example of Jesus. Jesus, he is like the perfect display of love. At what point in his life and in his ministry did he seek his own best interest?
Hmm.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. Love never seeks the self-interest. Love is not easily angered. That's one that maybe we all could. I know for me, that's one that's very convicting. Maybe not for you.
Well.
I doubt it, though. You got red hair, so you,
we're both redheads.
We are both redheads, so we probably understand this one quite well. But love is not easily angered, right? So, like, that's part of the patience. That's part of gentleness. It's part of kindness. This is a hard one. Love keeps no record of wrongs.
Mm.
You know, how often do we struggle against that one?
Yeah.
You know, well, this person said this or this, they did this, and I'm holding that over their head, and I'm not willing to give them, you know, my time because of this. That's not love.
Mm.
Love doesn't keep a record of wrongs. Mm. Aren't we glad God loves us?
We do that under the guise of justice sometimes.
Yeah,
too.
We do.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if God did that.
Mm.
Like, but what God tells us is that when He forgives us, He casts our sin as far as the east is from the west.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't keep a record of it. He blots it out, even out of his book. Mm. And that's what he's called us to do, too.
Mm.
So.
Wow. I love the part where it says that love doesn't rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Can you give us an example of what that looks like?
Yeah, I think that probably one of the most pertinent examples is when we think about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We think about the current situation right now today with the war that's going on and has been going on since October 7th, the devastation of that day, and then everything that has happened after that, whether it's the hostages that have been killed, whether it's the explosions and the bombs that have gone off in Gaza, or the war that's continued to penetrate into Gaza. And there's been not just the casualties of combatants. Even the death of terrorists is not a good thing. It's something we should not celebrate as human beings, because they're made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. But when we look at the lives of the children, the women, all of the people, whether they're on the Israeli side and the trauma and the brokenness that exists there, or the trauma and the brokenness that exists on the other side, all of this is not good, right? And so, like, as followers of Jesus, as we're walking in the way of Jesus, we have to call out what is good and we have to call out what is evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so the death of human beings is always bad. It's always bad. Sometimes war is necessary, but war is never good. Mm. There's always collateral damage. There's always hurt. There's always trauma. There's always stress and brokenness. And so, like, we have to call evil what is evil, and we have to call good what is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as Christians, sometimes we're too quick to speak, but we ought to be more slow to speak, so that we can be wise, so that we can demonstrate patience and kindness, so that we can demonstrate wisdom in the midst of these very complex, challenging situations.
Amen. Wow. So thinking about these very concrete parameters for what love looks like from 1 Corinthians, I'd love to talk about advocacy now. So how does this relate to advocacy? How does love shape our advocacy as Christians?
Yeah, well, let's start with the idea of agape love. Remember, agape love is this unconditional love that God calls us to. Advocacy is rooted in agape love, this unconditional idea, overcoming personal biases and aims for this the holistic flourishing of people, people that oftentimes are marginalized or discriminated against or oppressed. And it serves and advocates for even the people that society would say those people are unlovable. That's what Christian advocates go after. You remember the quotation earlier in one of our episodes when we talked about Emperor Julian. He talked about these impious Galileans, right? And what was his problem with them? Well, they were taking care of the people that were vulnerable in the Roman Empire. And he said it was like children offering children cakes to eat. The people loved it because they felt cared for. They felt seen. And for us as Christian advocates, we're going after the people that are most hurt, most unseen by the rest of society. And we're loving them, even though they seem unlovable to the rest of our culture and our society. Advocacy, grounded in biblical love, reflects God's desires for justice, for mercy, for humility. And all of this is exemplified by passages like Micah 6:8.
That's amazing. Since Paul wrote 1 Corinthians 13, the famous passage about love, how do you think he would answer this question? You know, like if we were to kind of put ourselves in his shoes and maybe imagine what he would say, how does love shape our advocacy in Paul's view?
Well, yeah, let's take a few of those principles that we talked about and maybe just apply them. So first one being love is patient, okay? Advocacy often involves working with people or communities, but over long periods of time. And so sometimes you're facing really slow progress, and then sometimes you're experiencing a lot of setbacks along the way. So a patient advocate remains committed to the cause, continuing to support and encourage the people that they're serving, even when the change seems gradual, right? An example might be a person working with a refugee family, or a person who's really trying to take the long haul there with the refugee family, and they're patiently helping them, maybe trying to navigate the legal processes, understanding that their integration into the society and their healing, it's going to take a long time. But love is patient, and that's what it looks like for that particular kind of situation. Or love is kind. So when love is patient, love is kind. Being kind could involve providing not just the necessary resources, but also offering emotional support or a listening ear, or even the ministry of presence, which is just sit with somebody when they're hurting, right? And just be quiet. Just be quiet and be with them. And that's very, very helpful in those moments. Or love doesn't boast, okay? It doesn't envy, or it doesn't boast. Authentic advocacy is selfless. We talked about that. Doesn't seek your own personal recognition, doesn't seek the amplification of your reputation or gain, right? So we should avoid comparing our work to other people or our organization's work to other organizations and what they're doing to try and chase after this public recognition. That's not
number
love.
Number of followers we have.
Number of followers we have. Who made it first to the thing or to the, you know, whatever it is. Instead, as Christian advocates, we should focus on the holistic needs of those that we're helping. That's the point. And then maybe love honors people, right? Well, this one seems maybe just a little bit obvious, but it has to be stated. Christians seeking to help those who are hurting, who are ostracized, should respect the dignity of those who they're serving. And that sounds like, well, duh, of course. But doesn't always work out that way. We have to avoid actions or services that can belittle the people that we're trying to care for or exploit them for our own public recognition or gain to say, wow, what a wonderful person that person is. Luke, man, everybody thinks highly of him because he did this. That's not love.
Yeah. So. Wow, that's so powerful. it's really important to remember that, because I think sometimes it can happen without us even really realizing that it's happening.
Sneaks up on us.
Yeah, yeah. So my last question for you on this is, what do we do when someone doesn't really want to be loved, or they don't really want to receive our help? How do we respond then?
I think we go back and we think about what Paul said, right? Love is patient. Mm-hmm. Love is kind. Doesn't think about itself.
Yeah.
We have to remain calm and focused. And even when it's in frustrating kinds of situations, sometimes when an animal is caught in a trap, a person comes along and they're going to try and release the animal from the trap. But what typically, or what can happen, is they get bitten, right? The animal doesn't know what's happening. All they know is they're in pain. And so they just bite the person who would be their rescuer. The pain that they're feeling is it's given an outlet at that moment. And it can be painful for the one who's wishing to provide help to them. And people are very similar to this. Christians who want to be advocates for the hurting must have a thick skin.
Mm.
You can't take things personally. You have to learn to forgive and move forward rather than holding on to grudges, because that's what love does, right? Mm. It doesn't keep a record of wrongs.
Yeah.
Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And as followers of Jesus, we should be a safe place and a conduit of hope for those who are marginalized, for those who are hurting.
Mm.
Sometimes it seems like people who don't want to be helped need it the most.
Mm.
Or maybe they want to be helped. They want to feel this kind of affirmation. But sometimes it feels dangerous when they start having to open up and be vulnerable. And for us, if we're going to walk in the way of Jesus, we want to be a safe place for them, to affirm them, not always affirming the things that they say or affirming the decisions that they make, but helping them understand that there is hope, that there is someone who is willing to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
There is someone who is willing to bear the burden, to carry it with them. So we have to love people in really hard circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices with the truth. And it's very easy to be hijacked by competing cultural or political narratives. One popular narrative right now is that everyone can have their own truth. And the reality is they can't. There is one who is truth, and he is the one who gets to define it. Jesus is the one who gets to define what is true. So Christian advocacy has to be rooted in him, in what he is doing in the world to restore the world to himself.
Mm.
And so as Christian advocates, we want to walk in the way of Jesus, following him, caring about the things, caring about the people that he cares about.
Yeah. Wow, that's so good. Yeah, even what you were talking about just now with when people maybe don't want to receive the kind of help that we want to give. You talked about having thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of how, you know, if we are to advocate out of a place of responsibility as bearing the image of God and honoring the image of God in others, then ultimately in those moments when we don't feel we get the kind of thanks that maybe we think we should get, you know,
mm-hmm.
that highlights again, like maybe it's not coming from a place of love then. Like
right.
maybe that is coming from a place of boasting or pride.
Yeah.
And just kind of remembering we're doing this for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, he gets to define truth. He gets to define what love is. And if we're doing this for him, then we do it out of obedience, regardless of how it's received. And we make adjustments to make it feel like love for the person receiving it. Because if, you know, we may think, okay, well, this is loving. I'm doing this. I would feel loved by this. But maybe the other person doesn't. So being willing to kind of be humble and learn as we go, but then realizing this is all for him at the end of the day.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This mm-hmm. has been really great. Let me summarize a couple points for us, as usual, so we can have a few takeaways before saying goodbye to this episode. Number one, love is part of God's character, and to reflect his image, we must love others too. Number two, love is unconditional, but it does not compromise the truth. And then three, Christian advocacy requires a love that is humble, selfless, forgiving, and patient. Again, a lot of these things are easier said than done, but they have to be said first before they can be done. So, Yeah, so that's it for this episode. We're looking forward to having you guys join us again for our next episode, which is going to be really exciting, where we really get into the nitty-gritty of things, where we talk about what is God's vision for the role his church plays in making the world a better place, and how do we individually fit into that picture. So we'll see you next time on Discover Your Roots.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Discover Your Roots. For more resources, check out the links in the show notes and follow us on Instagram @PassagesIsrael. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.